Okay, welcome everyone to the Arizona State Hospital Independent Oversight Committee meeting tonight. It is October 19th at 6:03, and we are going to start the meeting. Do we have any other members other than Chuck, Barb, Kay, Melissa, and Lori? I know Kim told me she was planning to join. Maybe she'll be a little bit late. Dee will join if she's awake, but she's in another country right now. And I'm trying to think if there was anyone else that gave me a heads up. Okay, let's go ahead and get started because we do have a pretty full agenda. So does anyone have to disclose a conflict of interest? If so, please state why.
Hi, this is Kay Coons. I have a conflict of interest. I have filed a complaint with the IOC, and I'll recuse myself from voting on matters that pertain to me.
Thank you, Kay.
You're welcome.
Now, Larry, is that okay since it's hard for Kay to print things out and get them to you via email?
Yes, I'll need the form signed. I can work with Tara to get that done.
Okay. Thank you.
But yes, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay. Was everyone able to review or listen to the last meeting minutes? We don't have any formal hand taken, but Larry does send them out. If so, do I have a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second. Any motion? Okay.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so moved. Next, do we have any updates from the ADOA?
Good evening. I do not have any updates. The only update I have was the reminder of the annual report, but I see that's on your agenda. Mm-hmm. So sounds like you made good headway on it and it's done. And so that's great. Thank you very much for getting that done. And I don't have anything else. If there are any questions or anything I can answer or try to answer for the group.
Okay. I think that's it. Let me text Alice because she was looking into one of the chart patient reviews. She was one of the reviewer. Barb was a reviewer. Melissa, I wasn't sure if you reviewed the first set of charts we were reviewing and then the second set, Chuck, Dee, and Alice, we're reviewing the second set.
So, no, I didn't.
Okay. Do you mean I couldn't remember.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I can text you the emails. Let me first, are you joining? I'm trying to see because that's one of our reviewers of that one. Barb, if you want to start with what your thoughts were on the retaliation of the
The chart was pretty interesting. It took a while to find the diagnosis. And the only thing that I found, there were two things. One, as an actual diagnosis, was ASD, which in reading the chart, which I didn't know at the beginning, it made a lot of sense. MS also said in one of his conversations with staff that he was DDD. And I don't know, that was not in the chart confirmed to me. The other thing is in the nurse's mental health notes, there was OCD was listed, but I never saw that as an actual diagnosis. I had some questions about, basically we reviewed the chart and it was very interesting, but we found no grievances. The staff responded properly to the patient. He was pretty verbally abusive to both staff and patients. He got physical a couple of times. He showed a lot of manipulative and defiant behavior, but when he escalated, the staff intervened and handled it properly. And there's nothing in there about grievances. Okay. I can tell you a little more about them, but.
No, that's good. I mean, that's what we were looking for, was to see if there was any evidence of retaliation or anything. So thank you, Barb. That was great.
You're welcome.
Alice, for the, I wasn't sure if you were involved with the first review. It was the larger one, the one that Barb was just discussing. I know you reviewed the second one with you and Chuck and Dee, and Alexa, I have Dee's notes.
Alexa, turn off Tulip Plan.
Okay. Thank you, Chuck.
Can I make one more comment, just because it was it was unclear if he had an actual therapy dog visit him at some point, as well as if he had a therapy dog that was not there. But he did speak a lot about his dog, referencing her name, and said some very unusual things about the dog and his relationship with the dog.
Okay, thank you. Alice, did you review that first set of information? I know Alice is on also.
She reviewed it, I know, at least reviewed the same one as mine. Yeah. I don't know if you're considering that the first one or the second.
Yes.
Okay.
So I know she's on, but maybe she can't unmute. So Alice, do you want to type anything in the chat or? Okay. Well, we'll wait to hear if Alice can unmute and talk about that one. For the second chart that we were reviewing, we did get the information. However, it was probably my fault when I wrote the email that even though we talked about in the meeting to get email communications in regard to the patient, we did not get that. I know that Lisa was trying to help facilitate that, but to make it all proper, I think I'd like to make a motion to get the emails, and let's go for a period of like 5 days before, 5 days after, so we can see if there's any pattern about the patient. So starting like September 7th to September 17th. But what we have found, I can report what we have found so far. I mean, Chuck, you reviewed, so you can report what you found, and I can report on what Dee told me, sent me an email.
Well, there were at least a couple of incidents where the first thing, nurse was reporting that that there was some, it seemed to be some antipathy of the nurse reporting towards the patient involved. At least a couple of instances.
Okay. One was
by the nurse. I'm trying to recall this because you kind of caught me unaware there for a minute. One was by the nurse, and another one about 10 days later was actually by a psychologist, if I remember correctly. And they both talked to the impression they had that the patient in question was experiencing increased anxiety. That's what I recall.
Okay. So now let me read what Dee wrote. And again, we'll wait. Oh, here I'm getting something from Alice. Okay, so from Dee, her notes are, there are several providers and multiple references throughout the progress notes that refer to the patient being involved in advocating for her peers, mirroring previous patient claims. So that was one of the issues that was alleged, that they were being, they felt that the involvement in advocating for their peers was causing the stress. The second, the written quality of some of the electronic progress notes are substandard. They contain typos, grammatical errors, verbiage to the wrong sex, statements that are contradicting, as well as other references that distort the true meaning of the writer's intentions. Number three, certain providers' service charting dates do not align. Some are written 1 to 2 days after the encounter date without a late entry notation. Prompt and factual charting are standards of care. This particular issue leaves the writer's recollection of those encounters details into question. Number four, one particular BHT consistently charts exaggerated and potentially fraudulent durations of service, notes that are confusing, opinionated and not fact-based, that lean in the BHT's favor. The intentions toward the patient is in question because of that. The same BHT also repeatedly tells the patient to contact the IOC and or write grievances. Based on previous patterns, most filed grievances statistically lead to unfavorable outcomes in the form of an unsubstantiated claim or retaliation. Fortunately for this patient, the grievance was substantiated, but claims of patient retaliation post-grievance submission are historically true. Number five, the electronic note referencing the medical cancellation doesn't exist in the files. Therefore, whoever was responsible for that occurring, author's name, date, time, and explanation cannot be verified, which is concerning at best. Six, the files containing only one electronic note from the RN in question. In that note, the RN offers no apology or explanation, nor does she accept responsibility for how her actions have negatively affected the patient. The RN does, however, redirect her away from the discussion to spend a significant amount of time writing condescending and negative notes. For example, staff do not come to work with the goal of targeting patients, or patient's mood continues to appear tense and somewhat angry. References to her advocating for other patients, setting patient boundaries, focusing on their own treatment, taking care of themselves, etc. Seven, the handwritten notes from the patient's IDTPs aren't electronically represented. There's no way of knowing who or what was said in those meetings. Eight, nowhere is it specifically stated that anyone is trying to slow down the progress. The psychologist actually stated the opposite. However, they were contradicting rehab statements regarding barriers to progress that would affect this patient's progress. The conclusion, we don't have enough tangible evidence. I suggest we request the missing handwritten or electronic records, the emails from Ash and from ValleyWise during that time frame. Okay, and anything, Alice, from you? I don't know if she's having trouble unmuting, but she agrees with the Dee's assessment. Priority number five is problem. My Google Meets has been muted. Larry, is Alice muted, and can you unmute her?
I'm unable to unmute an individual. I can only mute them.
Is it star six or is it pound star six?
It is star six if she's on the phone.
Yes. So Alice, you can try star six to unmute.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, perfect. Sorry, guys. Yeah, her issue number five, I thought was with the nurse. That was very unprofessional. There was no notation that I could find either about why the visit for the mammogram was denied. There is a lot of opinion here and there in the chart. I don't think that that patient overstepped boundaries as far as being an advocate in any way. I think it's a really good excuse, an inappropriate one, I should say, for her display of like nervousness and aggravation. It's because she feels helpless. The rug was pulled out from under her and she needed to go to this mammogram for fear of some specific health problems. And again, it just doesn't jive in the chart. And to not even have notation on why the nurse preferred that she go to therapy over going to her medical service, it's not there.
Well, I think the good news is that it was substantiated, and I think things were rectified. I think that it's still, we voted to get the electronic correspondence to see if the patient was also getting retaliated against or held back based on advocacy. We think that from our interviews with the patient, it was the cancellation of an important medical appointment that caused stress, not advocating for other people at the hospital. So I guess
sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah, what I meant. The aggravation observed was, not from advocation of people. Go on. I'm sorry, Lori.
No, that's okay. But anything else you guys that reviewed it want to add? But we can wait until we see the rest of the medical the electronic records.
So, Lori, because of all of this, all of the aforementioned comments by you and by Melissa and by myself, you are making a motion. You're in the middle of making that motion, which has yet to be seconded and passed by this body.
Sorry, I thought I did. I motion that we ask for the medical electronic communication regarding the patient from September 7th to September 17th. So we have kind of a period of time where we can see what it was before and after said incident to see if there was any retaliation or pressure to not advocate.
What particular time period are you asking for this?
I said it, September 7th through September 17th.
Okay, and when you say electronic communication, you mean specifically emails?
Yes.
Okay. I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. So moved.
Hey, Lori.
Lori, this is Mike. Really quick. I'm sorry, Lisa, to interrupt. And I'm not an expert in this by any means. And maybe Larry can jump in, but I think that's technically a public information request. So I don't know if there's a specific document or process the IOC needs to follow to obtain state electronic email communications. Okay. I will make sure that we're just doing this legally.
Okay.
Thank you, Mike. And I was just going to clarify that the reason electronic emails are available as public records is because we are a state-run facility. In any other hospital, those would not be discoverable. But in a state facility or a state organization. Emails are public records. They're not medical records, as Mike said. So it is a different process.
Okay. If you can shoot me the form or tell me where to go to do it, then I can do it. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Either Lisa or myself will make sure that you have the correct method in place to get that information.
And we'll need to know the names of the recipients and senders of the emails you're requesting too. You don't have to do that in public, okay. But.
Okay. I will. Okay. Next, Ash administration update.
Yeah. Hi, Lori, everybody, IOC committee members. So a couple updates really quick for the committee's information. Since the last time we met, and I apologize, I was not able to attend the last meeting. I was out of state attending a conference at that time, so I could not log in. Since the last time that we've met, we've had a couple of resignations on our psychiatry team, and one on civil, one on forensics. And we are actively looking to recruit to fill those positions. I believe they've been posted, but I can't guarantee that 100%. If they have not been posted yet, they'll be posted in the next few days as we go through the state's HR and recruitment process. Funny enough, though, kind of randomly, we have gotten some interest in working at the state hospital. Dr. Flowers got pinged by an individual on LinkedIn looking to join our team. So I'm very happy to see that. Hopefully we get some interest in these positions and we're able to fill them before the end of the calendar year. That's definitely my hope when it comes to those two roles. The second one is we did have in the past 7-10 days or so approximately, we had a bit of a speed bump. I don't know the right word to use, but I'll say speed bump in the forensic programming. We put a quick kind of freeze on some rehab programming so that we could address an issue at the state hospital on the forensic campus specifically. We have since taken care of that specific issue, and forensic programming is back up and operating as usual. This is not a change to our routine operations or procedures. This was a very specific issue that we wanted to address. And I apologize, I can't go into more details than that, but there is, right now, the forensic hospital is programming. I was on campus today doing rounds. Patients were, in their programming, in their sessions. Some people were playing violins in the gym. So I'm hoping that we're back up and running 100% where we should be on forensics. But that was just a little speed bump on the programmatic path, and we're good to go.
Can I make a comment? This is Kay. I wanted to say that we're not completely 100%. The full mall privilege for the patients that have full mall haven't been reinstated. So basically, full mall walk, which normally occurs on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday from 4 to 5 p.m., has not been reinstated. The PNUMS have directed the tech to not let us have full mall walk. Will that be fixed in the next few days or before Friday?
I was unaware of that, Kay. Let me follow up tomorrow with the team. My directive to the PNUMS nursing leadership and medical leadership was to restore forensic hospital operations back to normal. So let me follow up and I'll see what the issue there is.
That'd be great. Thank you, Mike.
You're very welcome.
Okay. That one question. How do you fill in? I know every hospital uses temps, but you do temps for psychiatrists too?
So we have that option, Lori. We do have contracts with 3, maybe 4 agencies that provide locum tenens to us. In our experience, though, I'm sorry for saying this, but people are temporary locum tenens for a reason. They're not the highest quality, and I apologize. That's just been my experience. So obviously our goal is to have full-time employees working for the hospital to provide standardized and consistent care to our patients. We have reached out to those locums agencies and asked them to supply us with some potential candidates that we can use as a temporary resource. But in the meantime, we are actively working to bring on full-time employees.
Okay, great. Did the two resignations come with a long lead time, or are they pretty abrupt?
I wouldn't say they were abrupt. One of them has already departed, and the other one is going to depart within the next 10 days or so. It's more of a kind of moving on / retirement scenario.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay, next I'll go with overview of incident and accidents. So I don't want to have you looking at the side of my head, so I'll turn my camera off. First one was in ASH 2023-3790, and it was an incident where, and it was an unusual one because it was on the forensic side, and typically I don't see incidents of that type of behavior of self-harm typically on forensics, so that was a little surprising, but the person did self-harm, and the nursing staff RN seems like she took control and managed the situation appropriately. The person did have laceration, and it was stated it was because of a particular BHT. So what they did is they reassigned that BHT to another unit while they were looking into it. So that was, I guess, a good short-term fix. And they also informed the treatment team to update the suicide risk assessment because of this, because you typically just don't see that. I don't see it on the forensic side. Next one was ASH 2023-3804. It was a fall, and the patient was waiting at the med window and fell. And because of that, they wanted to send the patient hit their head, so they were going to be sending them to the ER for further evaluation and a CT based on the doctor. And they got an order. They did have to use TSDs because the same patient had attempted AWOL and assaulted staff last time they were at Valleywise. So, but it went, it seemed to be going okay. But at Valleywise emergency room, they became very agitated and attempted to leave against medical advice, causing redirection. And the patient was very verbally abusive and combative to the staff at Valleywise. They eventually, and this was interesting to me, they eventually discontinued the 4-point TSD restraints. I'm assuming that means ashes, and they placed the patient in their own bed restraints. So I don't know the difference.
So Lisa can probably jump in on this one better than I can, Lori, but so when a patient goes to Valleywise for care, the individual is technically under their license. So I'm assuming based on what you just said, the individual in question was in the hospital's 4-point restraints, but then mm-hmm. Valleywise took control the situation, essentially not admitted the patient, but took over the charge of care. So if they thought that the individual posed a potential threat to safety of their staff, then they would abide by their licensing rules and put the person in their own, following their own restraint protocols. Is that correct, Lisa?
Yes, it is. The only thing I would add that is if somebody is in the ED and has not been admitted or treated, they may be in TSDs under the supervision of the hospital before admission.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, the next one is ASH 2023-3865. And this was attempted suicide, and a patient was found in their bathroom with a bed sheet around the neck and the toilet. So as I read through that, the patient now accepted that they're now on COS, LOS, one-to-one HR, I'm not sure, HR, with sterile room and two safety blankets. So it did say that they did a safety walkthrough and identified restroom and concerns were identified. Work order to were placed to secure and repair loose items, and they'll investigate possible changes to security fixes in the restroom. Must be somehow they were able to use the toilet in that plan, I would think. But I thought everything was anti-ligature. So it's a little
it's as anti-ligature or ligature resistant as we can physically make our environment. For the record, Lori, HR stands for high risk. So that's that's what that means. And we did put this individual under I believe he was they were put under a 2-to-1 observation to make sure that they were safe continuously moving forward. That's what HR stands for.
Okay. And that was, and then we have another one, ASH 2023-4004. And I noticed it's the same patient number, and it was another attempted suicide. But this time they had a one-on-one, and one-on-one said they heard the patient making a wheezing sound. So they called out to see if they were okay, didn't respond, continued making noises. So the BHT entered the room and they found that he was starting to turn color. So they activated a medical alert, began the Heimlich remover to attempt to clear the patient's airway. The first BHT was unsuccessful. Then another BHT took over. That BHT was also unsuccessful. And the registry BHT began the Heimlich remover. All attempts to clear by Heimlich were unsuccessful, prompting the first BHT to physically remove an obstructing object with their hands by reaching the patient's mouth. The object was removed and found to be a patient's sock. So immediately after removing the object, the patient's color returned to normal and began to breathe normally. Again, because of this, they searched the patient's room for any items that could potentially continue to be used for self-harm, and they were instructed to remove any clothes except a jumpsuit. And when asked why, you know, they were trying to ask why, but so that was even on a, so that was 10 days later after the first event.
Correct, Lori. And at that point, he was this individual was still under close observation. The one-on-one staff, and I'm not sure, they may have still been under a 2-to-1. I can't verify that or not from memory recollection. But the individual in the room with the unit staff essentially in the doorway watching them at all times.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for that. Let me see.
Excuse me, Mike, I'm not clear on that. So, but when the patient stuffed the sock, put the sock in his mouth, down his throat. There was somebody watching from the doorway, the BHT?
Yeah, so the way it works, Barbara, is if someone is on a one-to-one or close observation status over the night period, the staff is sitting in the hallway with the door open, watching, having line of sight on the individual in question. It's incredibly, I think the folks on this call would be incredibly shocked by how quickly somebody can make a suicide attempt. Just to, take a sock off their foot, like may have happened in this situation, and try to stick it down their throat. The amount of time it takes is literally seconds in many cases. But yes, that's how we're doing the overnight close observation.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Okay. No problem.
Next one, Ash 2023-4017. This was a person that's on COS LOS 101 for danger to other behavior and wanted to go to the restroom, asked a one-on-one registry one-on-one to go to the restroom. And the minute that the one-on-one turned her back on the patient unprovoked and hit the BHT on the back of her head, knocked her off the floor. Code gray was called. Now the BHT was encouraged by the hospital to call her agency and the police, to which she did both. Again, I know that we've had other IOC members, Crystal Fox, who worked at the hospital at Ash for 30 years and now works at Cottonwood. I think that's the one. And not Cotton, whatever the one private psychiatry hospital is. And she said that their management always encourages them not to call the police on patients if they know that they are that. So is it different units that encourage it? Does everyone encourage it? Do they try not to?
So it's a very fine line, Lori. Staff, and so my stance as the CEO of the hospital is that patients and staff, if they believe they are the victim of an assault, they have the absolute right as a victim to call police and file a police report. I will never tell a staff member or a patient not to call PD. Obviously, I don't want to see patients being arrested. But at the end of the day, these individuals, and by individuals, I mean staff and patients who are victims, they have those rights to call the police and file a police report. And me telling them, do not call police, I believe that puts the hospital and the state at a certain level of liability that I do not think is appropriate for us to take on. I hope that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mike, that's great. And that's interesting to know, because where I've been working for the past 3.5 years and left recently, people were always fearful of getting fired if they called the police. And sometimes we'd only have a few women working and have up to 20 patients and absolutely no security at the building. And so if I was reporting off to that short of a staff, I would typically try to remain unless I was too tired, but I try to remain. And I would let them know, look, if they're, violent offenders on the unit, you don't really have a choice but to call the police because you don't have security to call. And 3 or 4 small women working with, 16 to 20 plus patients. Yeah, I think it's unfair that some of these institutions have an unwritten policy of do not call the police. The police have told me before, we don't have to go back in and press charges. But sometimes in cases where we're in danger, the patient might need to be removed for a little while.
Yeah, and that's correct. And I'm going to always do what I think is best for the safety and security of the facility, the patients, the staff, and any individuals who may be victims. So it's very strange how that works out, but if the police are called by a victim of an assault, the hospital will absolutely cooperate with law enforcement. In this case, it's typically always Phoenix PD. Provide them whatever evidence that they request to help them with their investigation, and make sure that the victim's rights are upheld.
Mike, I have a quick question. This is Kay. I have a patient that was asking, he felt that excessive force was used to restrain him, and he has bruises and I guess something with his ribs. And he's been asking security to come down of the physical evidence, and he's been having problems getting security to come down to take those pictures. What's the hospital's policy on that?
In this case, this is Kay, correct?
Yeah, this is Kay.
In this case, Kay, I would definitely ask the individual in question to go ahead. The same thing is that he has the absolute right to call the police. Let them know that this happened, and we will cooperate with them as best as we can.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, the next one, 2023-4038. This patient was being healthy in the gym doing laps when all of a sudden fell and was on the floor and unresponsive. So he ended up going to the hospital, and at the time this was written, the patient was still at the hospital, but it looked like it was between the fall, within 2 minutes, person was stabilized, but it appeared maybe seizure activity. Hopefully the patient's okay, but they reacted and got him out of there in good time, so that's good. This one, 2023-4090, this was attempted suicide on the same patient that attempted a couple times earlier. This time it was different. This was part of a paper towel. And so their one-on-ones were trying to, and that patient was observed as a two-on-one after that incident. Again, they have to remove paper towels from close areas from the patient's bathroom and other areas. So, and it was reported. So again, a suicide risk assessment was completed again, now placing him as high risk or higher risk. And that was about 7 days later. And that's it for patient incident and accidents. As far as the perpetrator chart, it looks like that one patient was discharged that had been number one in assaults on staff and on other patients. And now it seems like even the top ones are just, most of them only have one. And then the top one had two assaults on staff and four assaults on patient. The next one had two assaults on patient. So that's good. One other thing, it was rumored that the hospital was encouraging patient or staff not to write incidents on patient, but I still see incidents on patients. Was that just an unfound rumor?
Yeah, Lori, you and I discussed that briefly. Yeah. I have no idea where that rumor came from. We're still issuing incident reports, as they come up. Staff are more than encouraged. If there's something out of the ordinary, staff issues, patient on patient, patient on staff, please let us know about it. So as far as I'm concerned, there has not been any drop in reporting of these situations. I believe it's actually more of a nuance to what you just alluded to, that we've been able to discharge some individuals who have historically been highly assaultive, and they're in the community settings right now at a lower level of care after being stabilized at ASH. So that's where we're going right now.
Okay, thank you. So we did have probably about 6 or 7 patient visits. Unfortunately, it was Chuck and I, so you're going to have to listen to us again. So
listening to the two of you.
I don't like talking the whole time, but the first patient alleged that they were threatened by staff and by patients. They wrote a grievance, and the investigator came to talk. They claimed that the PNUM on that unit and tech that we have seen when we saw a video is one of the staff that they're alleging. They also said that they did a room search on their room, and they took books out of bookshelves. They didn't restack. They unmade the bed. They didn't remake it. So there was some question on what's the policy. If someone goes through your room, do you have your staff put things back together, or do you just leave it in disarray?
That's a good question, Lori. I don't have the answer for that. Lisa, do you happen to know?
No, I don't. I know that patients are invited to observe the search, so they're usually there. And my expectation would be that they'd be respectful and not just throw things, but I don't know who puts things back. I don't know.
Okay.
Well, with this patient's specific allegation, actually, not so much. The allegation's already been made, which is that they basically dumped his room looking for whatever it is that they were looking for. Maybe it was just a general search. And then refused to put things back in place and make the bed, which the patient alleges is an absolute violation of hospital policy. Now, I have no idea whether that's true or not. And from listening both to you and to Mike, it doesn't seem that you know the answer to that, too. It would be nice to get an answer to that for this patient. Because if it's not policy, the answer to this patient is no, these people can come in and dump your room and walk out, and they don't have any obligation to put anything back where it was. But he seems to think that is an obligation. It would be nice if the IOC could get an answer on that.
Yeah. So I hear a motion to get the policy on room search etiquette, you know, after room searches are done.
I would like to make
I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Aye. So along with that, they said the PNUM broke cables, tore things off their wall. When they were threatening them with a grievance, they took everyone's chargers, and they did not give a list of property. And in the past, things have gotten lost. The PNUM will talk to them. They never had evidence. They met with their clinician, and the clinician thought they came across as aggressive. They also complained about that same person, and they said they refused to give them a snack, and then was told them to be quiet. Then later they, I think, put a snack on the table. They also claim that the same person is abusing a DD person, but the DD person won't sign a grievance when others write it for them. And the grievance phone number, they're not answering, allegedly. Phone in the conference room cannot connect to Mojave, so they have to use a laptop to connect. next patient said there was a lot going on, that they had brought up a grievance about cameras and they had them withdraw the complaint on cameras. The cameras were not working. Then they said that the Monday following Columbus Day, the hospital canceled all groups on forensic. And I think that now we have an explanation for that, as Mike explained, because of a situation they had a risk assessment. And from what Mike said, they've reinstituted groups and access to the best of his knowledge until he looks into the mall walk situation. So part of this was that none of the units were able to mingle. They got privileges taken away. And there's some discussion about not permitting friendships and getting picked on because of relationships. They also talked about, and we've heard this before, that a lot of the patients in there on the forensic side seem to have some insight, and they do see when they're working their programs and other people aren't, they get frustrated when they seem to be punished for people that are acting out and having bad behavior. And they want to know, why can't you just punish the individuals and not punish the whole unit when certain individuals are acting out and not working their program? They want to know, why can't you just ROU the people? I guess that's restrict to unit, I think. Okay. Now another was a person that had a medical condition that's been ongoing for a long time. And this condition periodically acts up and it's very painful and it requires a medical intervention with a procedure. And this happens periodically. So the person went to the Valleywise, had the procedure, which is known to be very painful. And when they were discharged back to ASH, the discharge sheet from the procedure from the surgeon, it's kind of the same, because this procedure is known to be very, very painful. Chuck can talk a little bit about.
If you want, I can jump in here since it's.
Yeah, we just don't want to identify the patient.
I won't.
Or, yeah.
But I can identify the condition and the medical cure for it, or at least the medical procedure for it, and the complications that happened, or that are known to happen, are expected to happen, and did happen to this particular patient. So this is a patient who has renal stones, nephrolithiasis in the medical terminology, and she has had repeated bouts, which is not unusual, of essentially kidney stones and past kidney stones in the past. There are various ways of treating the problem of renal colic, but in this particular instance, she was subjected to a medical procedure called lithotripsy. Now, lithotripsy is a procedure by which sonic waves are applied to the body. It is painful, and usually the patient, as in this case, is either under general sedation or under light sedation, conscious sedation, to not experience the pain. But what lithotripsy does, just so you all have an idea, it breaks up stones in the kidneys. This doesn't make the stones disappear. It just breaks them into smaller fragments that are then passable. Now, renal colic is an extremely painful condition. It has nothing to do with the actual stone passing from the kidney down the ureter and out into the bladder. It has to do with the degree of obstruction of the flow of urine. And as the stone passes down the ureter, that obstruction intermittently gets worse and gets better as the flow of urine is allowed to go down the ureter, and then as the stone moves into a different position, it blocks the flow of urine, causes the pain all over again. To give you some idea of how much pain can be experienced in medical literature, the pain of bad renal colic is about equivalent to the pain of having a baby. So it's very painful when it's very painful. When it happens, when there's a real significant obstruction. For this reason, patients are given one significant pain medication to follow up their lithotripsy as they pass these fragments, and also a prescription for Flomax in this particular case, which relaxes the smooth muscle of the ureter and makes the stone pass easier. In this particular case, this woman was given those prescriptions by
this person.
This person was given prescriptions by the surgeon or whoever was doing the procedure for those medications, significant pain medication and Flomax. But for reasons which she alleged has something to do with the doctor at the hospital, thinking that only Tylenol was good enough for her, did not get those medications. And so she went through a week of severe intermittent renal colic pain as these fragments passed. In one particular portion, again alleged by the patient, the reason she was not given pain medicine was because the hospital was out of the pain medicine. All of these things that I just described to you, the hospital being out of pain medication, doctor at the hospital saying that she could do well enough with just Tylenol, are really onerous problems.
I think that what the doctor at ASH refused to write the order originally, and the patient kept asking nursing and complaining and was really very weak. Then they finally got some, and then they ran out of the pain medication, but it was probably 10 days and the patient did not look well, did not feel well, and could not think well, or would have written up a grievance. And we said, well, you should write a grievance because, again, medical procedure should be, I think if you have a procedure, it should be followed.
Well, this was a particularly egregious thing. And as a member of this independent oversight committee, I'd really like some answers as to why this patient did not get a pain medication.
As an RN, I would like some answers also, because I would have been blowing up the doctor's phone. But I mean, I understand, of course, there's only so much you can do. But it's cruel. This seems cruel.
I agree.
So hopefully the patient has written a grievance, so that can come to attention. I think, Mike, you saw the patient and thought they looked not well, and then I think they told you.
Yeah, I didn't use the word not well, Lori. I said that the individual looks like they're tired when I had an interaction with them. And I did speak with Dr. Flowers about this earlier today, and he's looking into it. And I can't obviously go into details with the committee about the exact circumstances behind everything, but I wanted to say we do have concerns about potential diversion. And that's all I can say, unfortunately.
Okay.
And hi, this is Dr. Flowers. Agree. No patient should be allowed to suffer in pain, and we are looking at this particular case and trying to make sure that is not a situation that occurs in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Flowers.
Yeah. Okay, the next patient we visited with wasn't feeling well due to old injuries and arthritis, and the big issue that they have is that they're really not allegedly drug seeking. They really would like hydrotherapy, where they can, you know, use warm and cold waters and use that over the joints. That gives them a lot of relief. And they're not understanding why on this particular unit they won't give them access to the bath area where they can do that contrast bathing, where they can have a cup and pull water over there. The staff refuses to let the patient use the bathtub, but they instead give him OxyContin. So the patient's very frustrated.
Lori, this is Lisa. You had made us aware, and I thank you for that, of this matter last week. And mm-hmm. as soon as we have the name of the patient and the unit, Tara and the quality team can follow up.
Okay.
We have heard that concern, and after we talked, we looked, and we don't have a complaint or grievance about that at this time. So when we know the name of the patient and the unit, we'll follow up.
Okay. I will send that to you tomorrow. We also went to talk to a patient on Civil, and we were going to visit, Melissa and I were going to visit the patient after the Civil forum, and then I could not go, and you know, we need two members, so Melissa couldn't visit the patient either. So we did call to try to visit the patient over the telephone. We did have some trouble because the nursing staff did not know who the IOC was, what we did, where we were from, and why we were calling patients. Once I asked her to ask her supervisor, then her supervisor found an email. And I did tell her I thought that they had posted the IOC and information about us and all the nursing stations, so we would not have to do this. But one thing that Lisa said also is that if we know ahead of time and we let them know, then they'll let the units know. What's happened over the last month, we've had a big list of patients, and a lot of people are busy and traveling, so I haven't really had it. So that's why I felt compelled to just sit down and do it, and I had Chuck do it with me. So that's why we were out of town, and we had a couple hours, so I went ahead and we did it. But in the future, we'll try to do that. Another patient said they've been not feeling well because they have acid reflux. And the patient has a long history of having acid reflux and taking medication for it and taking Mylanta. And they really say it happens sometimes when, I think it's if she drinks too much fluids or every once in a while, but this is kind of known. One time she was showering and the patient threw up in the shower and tried to clean it up, couldn't get it all down the drain, but told the housekeeper, and the housekeeper then told the staff that she's throwing up and doing it purposefully. And she said, the person said it only happens when they drink too much coffee. But now they think the patient is trying to throw up the meds, and now the patient feels that they're being punished, and they have to sit out 45 minutes every time they take their meds, which is three times a day. But she feels bad about that because she's never been non-compliant. She wants to take her meds. She's always taken her meds. And the patient's starting to feel She's unsure why this housekeeper would say that about her. And the patient's a short-termer, but she really, really felt unhappy. And she's never, the person's never filed a grievance. So that was concerning. And let's see, we did talk, we tried to talk to someone in CRU. They weren't there. We did talk to another patient today that really seemed to us to really seemed a lot more positive than we've seen the patient in the past couple years. The patient said that right now their big concern is they had an issue with a female staff, so the patient asked if they could have a male staff as a doctor, and now he feels that he's being, patient feels they're being retaliated against by some female staff. He filed a grievance, and I think he talked to Mike as Mike was walking through the doing rounds, and Mike, you told the patient they should have a resolution in a few days.
Yeah, I spoke to Dr. Flowers about this earlier today.
Yeah. And then the patient also said that there was some discussion of the ADCL. They were talking about a particular staff, the same staff we saw in the video, and that staff was aggressive. A nurse who reported that staff person got intimidated by the PNUM. They saw them crying in the nurse's station. And now that patient who was, that nurse was good, quit, and now it works at the VA, which is unfortunate. The other allegation is that medical treatment and coordination often tends to be problematic for people that have certain conditions, such as diabetes. It's important, as you guys know, that they see their endocrinologist, see their eye doctor, see their dentist, see their who's the foot doctor? You know, people that take care of podiatrists. Yeah. And they said that often they can go a year, year and a half without an appointment or treatment, and that's hard for people with certain medical conditions. They do have, and this is alleged again, that the ASH dental clinic person is allegedly doesn't have the best hygiene habits, so the patient didn't want to see the ASH dental person because they've said that they've dropped equipment, picked it back up with their hands, things like that. They also, again, we're talking about a particular staff that when people make grievances, they'll move that. I think the person is a PNUM, yeah. And they'll move them to another unit and then they'll move them back. And there have been problems with one particular patient. And that was recently, this last week, it was either Monday or Tuesday, in a conference room on a forensic unit around 11 or 12. And they thought that the IOC should request seeing a video about that. So that was, and then the final one with a couple other patients said that, again, full mall hadn't been restored. The other thing is, apparently, allegedly, some people, some patients, more than one, seem to have been looking at porn on the computers and storing it on the desktop. They all used to have their own accounts. So it was interesting why IT couldn't just limit the accounts for those people that don't obey the rules. Instead, they said the computers were reformatted and everyone's being penalized. Now the computers it can't open a PDF. So the Adobe that's on there doesn't work. It doesn't have Word or any programs on it. They are not allowed to download anything, so they can't do it. They can't do homework. They can't print. It's not printing. So that was concerning that. And for some patients, if they're in resolution group, they have homework. And a lot of them like to type it out and print. So now they are all using one computer that's really locked down and doesn't have supportive software. Instead of just having IT identify the people that did it and remove their privileges for a while until they can follow the rules. So is it known? Is it purposeful that they've removed and reformatted the computers and everyone has to now go in as one user?
Lori, it's Mike, it's purposeful. So we had a lot of concerns with patients. Keep in mind, folks, that we are talking about state property. So these are state-owned computers that our patients were using, not just for pornography, but for also multiple cases of installing malicious software onto our PCs, software that overrode our security protocols and allowed the patient to install their own operating system. We did essentially lock those computers down so that the patients can still use them, but they are not able to save anything at all to the computer itself. They must have their own personal USB drive, which the patients are allowed to have for saving their files and whatnot. I will say for the committee's minutes, I was not aware of the issue with the PDFs. So I will look into that tomorrow with our IT team, as well as the Microsoft Word issue. The state overall, as a whole, does not use Microsoft products. So we have migrated to the Google Suite for all state services. So we by and large do not use Microsoft Word, Access, Excel, PowerPoint, things like that anymore. My understanding was that they installed essentially what's referred to as a freeware software platform for doing document editing, taking notes, things along those lines. But I will follow up on the PDF and the Microsoft Word conversion issue within the I'll know more about that within the next day or so.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Patients are having problems because they have legal documents that are in doc format, or some of the administrative code is in PDF, and so they're not able to, since we don't have a law library, like their only way of looking up laws is like through PDFs and things of that nature. So if we can get that resolved, that would be great. There's one other thing, I guess VLC is some kind of video player and rip files and do those types of things, and that software is missing, and I don't know if that's coming back or not, but it's basically like a media player.
Okay, yeah, let me look into that one as well. Okay, so I have Microsoft PDF and the VLC media player system.
Player.
Yep.
Yes. I have a question, Mike. Do you know the identity of people who are, let's just say, malusing computers? Do you know who these people are?
We have a suspicion. Dr. Goldstein, the issue that we run into is individuals logging in under somebody else's account. It's very difficult for us to control that, unfortunately. So that's why we went the route of essentially locking down the computers, and the patients have their own USB storage files to store their own material onto.
Okay, I just wanted to know if you knew, because if you don't know, then you can't, otherwise if you did know, you could, restrict the privileges of those individuals. Yeah. All right, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay. Another, some patients are now saying they're back to two snacks a day and two sodas. Now they had increased it, and we understand, I think from a previous meeting, that you're trying to prevent people from buying a bunch of stuff and then extorting higher prices for snacks. And that's what was happening. Patients were buying out all of the X from the snack machines. But with only having access twice a day in the evening when patients are hungry, the issue's gotten worse now that they're down to two snacks a day, that the patients that don't use their snacks, then they have snacks and they end up selling snacks at a higher rate. So they're wondering if they could get more, you know, get it increased. Because I thought you guys were trying to do it four snacks a day.
I don't remember having that conversation about four snacks a day. Hey, is that still an issue, or is this an old complaint or grievance that is still kind of?
It's still ongoing. So I believe that we can have two items out of the snack vending machines. And I was wondering if we can increase that back to four. I know that sometimes two can be a little sparse, and that is actually kind of driving the prices higher, because some people who are willing to forego those snacks are selling them later in the evening because we're only allowed two snacks and things of that nature. So I was wondering if we can increase that back up to four.
Is that two snacks per?
No, it's two snacks per day.
Two per day.
Yes.
Okay, let me find out what's going on. I definitely don't want the patients, you know, hoarding the machines and then selling to other patients at a higher rate. But yeah, let me find out what's going on.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Okay, so the next is, let's see, forum visits. So Melissa, you were at the civil forum. Do you want to report?
Yeah, sure.
I get to not talk.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. So it seemed like a pretty good turnout. There was, I don't know, around 16 to 20 people there total. The first part of the forum was updating status from, I presume, previous forum. So the first update was that a barber / stylist had been hired, and that they're at the hospital. And I think at the time they were doing some training, so that was good. There was a question, I guess, about having an advocate for the court, and it was explained that one option is like your attorney is your representative and advocate, but that also you can ask someone to attend with you, for example, you know, family member. There was a question about if you're court ordered, how if court ordered, I wasn't 100% clear on this, Lisa, I don't know if you, but if court ordered, is there any way to have perhaps a different judge? And there was some conversation about potentially, I think the treatment team decides about the court order, not the judge. I don't know if you remember that part of the discussion, but I think that was just a clarification.
Yeah, I'm going to try to pull up the tracker from that and just see if it's said anything more.
Okay. You know, another patient just made a comment about, you know, dealing with negative feelings, and you know, there was some conversation that the text, you know, on the unit can help with that. And then there was some other sort of positive encouragement from some of the other patients during that conversation. There had been in the past, when there had been code grays, some of the patients had felt unsafe in that moment, because I think there can be like a lot of people and a lot of commotion. And so Tara was explaining, for instance, that, you know, the techs are trying to de-escalate more, and they're doing drills and training. And I think administration was going to go back to the patients for some more ideas too on how to maybe make that not feel like that. The next update had to do with the patient hygiene boxes. I guess in the past there had been, people had some missing stuff, but the question was asked if that was getting better, and most of the patients said yes. And then there was some more reinforcement about, you know, if family sends you anything, please make sure they put your name on it. If something sent to you directly from family, let's say from Amazon, to ask the social worker so they can put your name on it. So there was some more, you know, just reinforcement about that. I'm going to go on to the new items next, but Lisa, I don't know if you found anything. If not, I'll just keep going.
Yeah, hi, Melissa. Yes, I did. I'm looking at the notes, and it was primarily talking about court-appointed attorneys. Mm-hmm. I didn't see anything in our follow-up about judges. I mean, the judge is obviously appointed outside of our scope, but it was talking about advocacy and how the court-appointed attorney is the primary legal representative, and then patients can ask anybody else to attend with them as well. That was the extent of our notes.
Okay, great, thanks. So for the new items, there was a request, because a lot of people go to the library, especially at certain parts of the day, if they could get some additional furniture like beanbag chairs and some music to relax to while in there. There was some discussion about snacks, you know, could the hospital get some more healthy snacks, such as unshelled sunflower seeds and sugar-free snacks, more options on snacks every day, because I guess it's, you know, the same snacks maybe every day. Another patient just sort of mentioned about the turnover of staff and, you know, recommended maybe bonuses or raises. Then there was another question about getting an MP3 player on one of the units, because I think there wasn't one for some reason. Let's see. Oh, a request to get more laminations. If I heard that correctly to you, Lisa, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what's getting laminated, but it sounded, I thought the response was like a couple times a month that was going to happen.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Melissa?
Yeah, laminations, like are people getting things laminated?
Gosh.
Cards or something? I don't know. I didn't understand that comment.
Sorry, I was having technical difficulties. Yeah, I would have to, I could follow up with Tara.
Okay, I'm almost done. There's just a couple more things. Another patient commented that they used to get photocopies from the nurse's station. I think it was one photocopy a day. And then I guess it's sometimes it's hard, like on weekends and holidays, the librarian's not there to be able to get a copy. So there was just a request for more access to be able to get a copy when needed, a photocopy when needed. And then another request for a battery-operated TV if it was approved by the treatment team. And then there was one patient that came up to me afterwards, and I'm not sure if there was any if there's going to be follow-up, but had questions about alternatives to the like court appointed attorney, because they weren't real happy with them not knowing their story, right? It was like last minute that the court appointed attorney, public defender came and talked to them. And that's all I had.
Okay. One thing you said, asking for a battery powered TV.
Mm-hmm.
That seems unusual, but I don't know if all civil campuses have people that may self-harm with swallowing batteries and stuff. So how would that work?
Lori, it's Mike. So we would not permit patients on the units to have their own personal televisions, regardless if they were battery powered. I'm not even aware of a battery powered television, yeah. Period, but we would not permit that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if that's something. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, perhaps at the next meeting that will get clarified, because at the end of this meeting, right, it seemed like that might be a potential. So I think that probably needs to just get clarified.
Thanks, Melissa. We'll make sure that gets clarified.
Okay. So one thing that we can check again, is there anyone from any other IOC, the DD, the North, the South, or the Central IOC on? And if so, would they like to give an update? I kind of skipped right past that in our agenda.
Lori, I don't see anybody on.
Okay. Thank you. So at this point, we have from the committee, do we have anything, or from administration, that we failed to cover that you can recall before we go to public comment and then executive session and then back to regular session? Yeah. So hearing nothing, do we want to go to public comment? And again, for public comment, to remember, when you're making your comment, try not to identify a particular staff or talk about exact details of treatment. You can talk about general things, or if you have a grievance or tendencies. And then just for the sake of time, we'll put people on a 3-minute. So I'll set a timer for when we begin. Remember, after that, we will go to executive session. And Kay, we will give you that number to call in, or link if you happen to be on via computer before it starts. So
I'll leave the phone number.
Okay. So let's go ahead and start. Do we have anyone from the public that would like to make public comment?
Yeah, Rodney Woodville on Sango.
Okay.
Yeah, just hear me out on this, and I'm going to read it. You know, part of this already, because you already discussed it, but I'm going to read it. IT came and reset the computers on Sago. They didn't set up individual user accounts. They assigned a local user account, but didn't install printer drivers, and the PDF file could not be opened without administrator permission. They didn't install Microsoft Office Word, and the LibreOffice, which is the freeware, can't be used to read, write the Word documents. This has caused a delay in the progress of several patients who are in the process of a class action, which is restricting the patient's legal right to due process of the law. Any delay in this due process or restriction is considered victim tampering and witness tampering. Those that know that a victim is being tampered with are responsible to report this to legal authorities under civil rights law called actions for neglect to prevent, which is also punishable and adjudicatable. Margaret McLaughlin was made aware of the printer driver and Word by VET4 today staff, but shortly thereafter, another patient who was a writer and he does poetry and such smashed the printer and the computer. Now, I want to say something about this, them hacking the computers. They didn't use a malicious program. What they did was, all IT has to do is lock out BIOS and give permission to certain whatever EXE executable programs, like the PDF. Now, here's what they did. What they did was they jacked with the power while the computers were firing up and used F9 or something to access BIOS and reset. What they did was they reset Windows through the computer. They didn't use a malicious program. They just hammered F9 or F11 and pulled the power and made it go to a BIOS program, which is a reset where you reinstall Windows. So the computer has it in itself. So that's how they did that. I'm just letting you know what they did to the computers. All the IT has to do is lock out BIOS, and they can't do this to the computers. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else? Someone has a raised hand. Go ahead.
Yes, Goldie, this is Robert Dunn from Mojave. Is there any way that we can set up a in-person visit so I can talk to you and whomever else on the IOC about a new therapeutic progression plan that I was given with no extra pages? It's 2 pages long. And the major thing that I get out of it is I could say almost any word in a loud voice, and I get put on ROU for 2 weeks at a time and restricted from everything.
That's all.
And that's all. I mean,
well, they can't answer you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, this is Timber Briscoe. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, my name is John Wallace, Sycamore. Can you hear me?
Okay, John.
Okay, yeah,
Tim,
sorry.
Tim, we'll go to you next, Tim. Okay.
I'm sorry. Let me see. We got a lot of coverage since I only have 3 minutes and I'm not a lawyer or a computer expert. I'm just going to say the computers were being misused, but the hospital has, made it difficult for us to do anything with the computers. Furthermore, I'm the guy who asked you to visit me, and you called me on the day room phone at the worst time of the day for me. It is not private. Anybody could have heard me talking to you, and a lot of the criminals here and the patients, they can be very abusive. The retaliations I've suffered are inhuman, let's put it that way. Anyway, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration defines a normal environment as therapeutic. The living spaces are supposed to be the most integrated, connected to the community, and normal environment possible. To deprive me of anything because some other mental patient did something wrong with it violates my liberty interests. I'm not allowed to have a normal ink pen because somebody else stabbed someone with one years ago. I've never attacked another human being in my life. My arthritis makes it difficult to write. Also, I have been ROU'd many times and have only once seen the doctor's order. There's a lot more to that issue, but the staff do not have the authority to restrict anyone's movement except in an emergency situation. No aspect of mental health care is allowed to be punitive. As for calling the police, for more than 10 years, patients could call the police at all. The VLC app was provided by a patient. It allowed us to view movies and other unusually formatted videos and music that the Windows or the installed media player couldn't read. I was finally sent to a pain management specialist in 2020. That doctor's recommendations were never followed. He became so frustrated at being ignored and his recommendations mismanaged, that he won't answer any email from this hospital. One last thing. Since I came here, I've been dealing with this osteoarthritis and all these injuries for decades. I was originally diagnosed in the 1980s. I had this disease under control when I got to this hospital through food and hydrotherapy. I was allowed to use the tub room. The doctor arranged my medication so I get a double dose of the oxycodone as early as 4 o'clock in the morning. Then I go in the tub room and do the hydrotherapy and yoga that helped keep my joints mobile. Now my joints are locking up very quickly because I can't stand the pain to do the physical therapy without the double dose of oxycodone. I still get it at 4 in the morning, and I am allowed to shower at 5 in a shower that has no seat, no handrails, and only one spigot way up above my head. It's useless, dangerous for me to use that shower. And I started doing the tub room hydrotherapy in 2014. And no one has ever checked on me while I was in that room, even now. I'm allowed to use it at 6 in the morning, and it still helps, but I can't do much of the yoga. It's too painful. But no one checks on me. They open the door, they let me in. Sometimes they'll knock on the door to do census, you know, but they're not keeping an eye on me, and I am at health risk. I'm 66. I'm way overweight, not because I eat too much, but because I am being physically neglected. I can't walk because a bone broke in my left foot in 2020. No one did anything about it. All right. Please, I invite you all to come and visit me. If you call me, make it a legal call in this conference room where A, it's private, and B, there's something more than a 10-inch wide iron bench to sit on. Thank you.
Thanks. If I can get someone to come, then we can do a couple visits in person, hopefully.
I'll be able to, different times. So just let me know. I'd love to do that.
Okay. Thanks, Alice.
This is Alice. You're welcome.
Tim?
Yes, thank you. And I believe the other patient that was here before me on Mojave would like you to come see him.
Okay.
All right, here I go. Now, we are allowed 30 minutes outside at Full Mall Friday through Monday. This is meeting the minimum federal requirement of being outside time. We're allowed on the patio, but how are we supposed to acclimate back to society if there's no socialization going on more than a half an hour? And hold on. Now that's Tuesday through Thursday over in the gym. When we go out now, we don't go out with any other units Friday through Monday. We get a half an hour outside by ourselves. How am I going to socialize proactively with the same 19 people I'm on the unit all day with? I asked for a copy of all my grievances, extensions, decisions, and appeals 3 months ago from patient advocate Tara from TC Skaggs to take care of it. I was told at first, it'll take a little bit. Now he is redacting all of it, and it's going to take some more time. I don't know when it's going to get to me, and I don't know why it's being redacted, because I'm the author of those. So Also, if hygiene or a mayonnaise packet or a hot sauce packet is found in your room during a room search, which we have monthly, we lose our special replacement meal, which is called special for a reason. And this is only on Mojave and Sycamore. And why it has to be such a strict rule, I don't know. I think it's the penum. Media player does not work, or the program isn't even there on the computer now. So we can't play music except for through, I think it's called Groove Music or something. Law library consists of two books, which we're allowed at library two times a week for an hour at a time. And if there's more than so many people, you cannot come until the other people leave. It's about 10 people in there at the most, which federal law requires us to have access to the library anytime, and a lot more than just two books. We're supposed to have LexisNexis computer service to look up case law, new case law, stuff like that. We haven't had a Stop and Shop for quite some time. You guys were talking about saying things of your feelings to the doctors and stuff or staff. If you and whenever you tell staff or doctors about your negative feelings, they're used against you. And so you must be careful about what you say to them. Otherwise, it's going to go into your chart notes and saying that you're not being positive, I guess. Yavapai County Deputy Attorney Kenny Kalegi is giving most of her cases to another attorney in the office. Watch for your letter in the mail if you're out of Yavapai County. The patient that had the kidney stones. Obviously, the on-call doctor was lying, because I myself am in chronic pain due to gunshot wounds and laminectomy. I take MS Contin and oxycodone daily, multiple times a day. I don't understand how Ash was out of pain meds. So the doctor was obviously lying or just didn't want to do nothing. I've had to ask them to call the on-call doctor on the weekend, and they refused because they don't want to disturb them. I said, that's why they're called on-call. It's for emergency. And I was, just shoot aside. But thank you. And if you guys come, I'd like to see you too. I appreciate everything you do, and thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Yep.
Do we have anyone else? Okay, so if we don't, we're going to go to executive session. So, Kay, do you have a pencil?
Before I go, hold on and get it. Okay, I'm ready.
Larry, put it's 470.
470.
273.
273.
8788.
8788. 470-273-8788.
And the PIN number is 559-442-512-pound. 512-pound.
512-pound. So it's 559-442-512-pound.
Yes. And for those that want to join through Google Meets, I pasted the Google Meets one in. Okay, so
Larry, I'm gonna go ahead and hang up and call.
Yeah, so first we have to adjourn public session and go to executive and then come back.
So okay.
Motion to adjourn public.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
So adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Dr. Flowers, for staying late, and Lisa and everyone, and Frederica.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Okay. I'm joining. I'm on.
Okay. Thanks, Larry. I'm on too. This is Kay.
And this is Dr. Goldstein.
Hello.
Hi, it's Kay.
Hi, Kay.
I'm Alexa.
I'm Alexa.
Hi.
Ori will be on in a sec.
Okay.
Hello.
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 Hi. This is Lori.
Hi, Lori.
Is everyone back?
I think so.
Did Alex come back on?
We're missing Barb.
And Barb? Okay.
Oh, there she is.
Okay. Okay. Is everyone back? Okay. So let's call the meeting to order.
Hey, this is Alex. Come on.
Okay, there she is. Okay.
Okay, so let's call the meeting back to order. And we've come back from executive session, and we do have a motion to review the videos of earlier this week. It was either Monday or Tuesday in the conference room on Mojave. That we'd like to review that video. It's around 11 or noon. I can give more details with who the person is that we're looking at, or the persons, when we talk to Ash Administration. That's one. Two, we'd also like to view video of another PNUM allegedly going after and yelling at a person with DD out in the yard or the mall. So that we'd like to look at. And we'd also like to have Larry review the original video that Melissa and Alice and I viewed about a month and a half ago. So that's my motion. Do I have a second?
I second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay,
aye.
So moved. Is there anything else we'd like to motion for?
Adjournment.
Okay. Okay. I second
Lori,
that.
Lori, this mm-hmm. is Larry. Real quick, just remember to send an email to me and to Mike, and so we can get that scheduled.
Okay. I will.
So, concern that on the call.
Okay. I will.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, guys. It's been a long one, but thank you. Have a good
thank
night.
Thank you. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Bye.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.